Now, behind many start again. Behind many a great movie lies a good book. The 2009 Melbourne International Film Festival is about to end, and while most people have been attending the festival to see the films, book publishers have used the event to pitch books to film industry professionals. This year, 10 Australian books have been chosen for pitching to Australian and visiting film producers. Among them are Piano Lessons by Anna Goldsworthy, Thursday's Child by Sonia Hartnett, and Disco Boy by Dominic Knight. But what's involved in the pitching, and what riches lie ahead for an author whose book is adapted for the big screen? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined in Sydney by Ailey Lawson, a publishing consultant with Hachette Publishing. And in the studio with me is Simone Murray, a senior lecturer in communications and media studies at Monash University here in Melbourne. Welcome to the Book Show to both of you.
Hi, good to be with you.
Romana.
Well, Ailey, let's start with you. One of your previous jobs in London was devoted almost entirely to pitching books to filmmakers. How does pitching a book to a filmmaker differ from pitching a book, say, at a book fair to publishers?
It's quite a different process. I was dealing with, as you say, filmmakers and television production companies. And probably the key thing is, and it's easy to forget, is that it's not about the writing. You know, that's the big difference. If you talk to a publisher, say a French publisher or a German publisher about translating a book, you're talking about the writing and the mood and subtlety. But if you're talking to a film producer or a television production company, it's about characters, it's about plot, it's about point of difference, and it's about being succinct. You can't be wordy.
What's point of difference? What does that mean?
Point of difference. Why adapt this book? You know, what is different about it? Why, you know, out of thousands and thousands of things that are published, why would this work as a film or a television program?
But then why do they say that? You know, they say, oh, this is Gone with the Wind meets Mrs. Robinson or something.
Oh,
and that's
all
about, that's not really point of difference, that's point of similarity. That's saying, well, it's just like this, only it's just the same. It'll sell.
Yes, it's all about selling. But I think with that, it's a point of reference, which is quite important if you're talking about, if you're talking to people in another industry. I think coming from the book industry, it's very easy to get used to making references to, you know, to other books, other authors and so on. But what you've got to do is think, okay, well, it's a completely different industry. They have a different set of references. What we need to do is think about what's sold, what's sort of visually relevant, and take it from there.
So
it's all about being completely different. It's a different industry, and it's it won't be the same product.
So you'd be really good at sort of summarising books to like three sentences.
The elevator pitch, which as it's known. I've certainly got better at it.
Elevator pitch, because what, you get into an elevator with a screen producer.
Exactly. And you've got a minute and a half, and it's your one opportunity. It's you've got their attention. There's no one else there. And you can't just mumble. You've got to think, okay, well, what is the essence of my book? And I remember talking to an agent, a film agent, who'd been doing it, you know, for 30 years. And he said he actually had sort of three versions of the pitch. He had the elevator pitch, which was the minute and a half, 3 minutes. And then he had one that was about a paragraph, depending on, you know, where he was standing. And then he had the long pitch, which was fine over coffee or, you know, over a meal.
So how many films have ever actually been produced after an elevator pitch? Do we know that?
I'd love to know. I know certainly that if something captures someone's imagination, that's what it's about.
How would you prepare yourself for the pitch?
Good question. The first thing is obviously to be very, very familiar with the book involved, and to then think carefully about what the key elements are about the characters, about why it would work as a film or a TV program. And as I say, it's not about the writing. It's about, well, is there a character that the audience would relate to? Is there a potential for spin-offs? Is there an amazing plot that's incredibly clever that isn't so complex that you'd have to chop it all off? Or in fact, is it very complicated, but could you cut out lots of elements so that it would work as a two-hour film?
I can't imagine there'd be too many publishing houses these days who employ a person to look after the film pitching. Is that unusual?
It is unusual. I was doing it in London and doing it for HarperCollins, which, you know, it's a very big company. But even there, to my knowledge, there was no one else who had that role in any other publishing company in the UK or, in fact, the US. There are publishing companies who have relationships with film producers or film production companies, and that's becoming more common.
Melbourne Film Festival the only event of its kind in Australia where pitching books takes place?
To my knowledge, it is. I think it's fantastic. I think it's an excellent opportunity because, obviously, you know, books have been being adapted for film purposes for a very, very long time. I was sitting on the bus this morning and I suddenly remembered reading something about 20 years ago about a Victorian author, Mary Elizabeth Braddon, who was enormously successful, contemporary of Dickens. And one of the first films ever made was adapted from one of her very successful novels. And that was in, 1904, I think. So it's been going on for a long time.
So, Simone Murray, it's been going on for a long time, but is it increasing, the use of books for the ideas for films?
It is. And one of the ways it's tending to increase is that big international book fairs, which take place in Frankfurt and London and Bologna for children's books, are now structured around sessions where agents can meet editors and also film producers and pitch to each other. So just as the way we're seeing it, the books at Melbourne International Film Festival, there are more institutional events that let this happen. So they catalyse the process.
Does that mean that filmmakers have just lost their creativity? Why do they need to lift the ideas from books?
The idea that adaptation is sort of second best, not too creative, a second-hand way of making something doesn't really hold up if you think, you know, Shakespeare's plays are adapted from other sources often or from recent history or from versions of British history of centuries earlier. I mean, there never has been a culture that was based entirely on ideas that had no precedent. So it's not sort of the intellectual bankruptcy of the film industry or the creative lack of ideas. It's more that they understand that certain narratives and certain content engages people deeply, and people will pursue it not just in one medium but across a whole range of medium. They want to stay inside the story.
So who's wooing who here? Is it all one way?
Everyone's wooing everyone is I think what's going on here.
It's an orgy then.
There's a big love in Frankfurt apparently.
There is indeed. I've been to that one. I think the big thing here is that it's about brand and marketing as well and franchises, and it's, you know, there's a lot of money to be made for everybody. When you think about a lot of film adaptations of something, whether it's the Harry Potter series or whether it's something like Shrek, I think everyone can benefit.
But does everyone want to have their books turned into a film?
I think authors, if they're being honest, say yes, but then get squeamish about what the process might involve. I mean, adaptation can obviously go horribly wrong. It can alienate your readers. It can betray your story, all this moralistic discourse that goes on around adaptation. But, you know, if it works well, the benefits for the author in terms of accessing a new audience are huge. The benefits for the publisher, even if they don't own the film rights, they can benefit from tie-in editions with the film still on the cover.
So the pictures the actors on the cover?
That's right, all the film poster art portrayed on the cover, that sort of thing.
And Ellie, what were you saying?
I was going to just say that I know that a good example of that is Stephanie Meyer series. The film of Twilight came out in December. And, I mean, that was already on the top of the bestseller lists. But then in January, there was a sales lift of 20%. And that's all due to the film coming out.
And you also see in the Stephanie Meyer example, which is such a good example of a cross-media franchise, publishers are also able to bring out the making of Twilight or the Twilight film companion. Or there are all sorts of other book activities or possibilities beyond the novel itself.
So So we were just talking about the writers again. I mean, some writers can say, look, okay, I've handed over the film rights and whatever, I'm washing my hands of this. I'm obviously not a filmmaker. They can do what they like. Others, like someone like Ian McEwan, will go in and actually write the film script or supervise or produce the film almost.
In Ian McEwan on Atonement, which was obviously a much-loved and esteemed book, got himself an executive producer credit. So he wasn't a line producer doing the budgets and the schedules, but he had an producerly oversight that gave him a say in important things like who would be selected as the screenwriter, which in the end was Christopher Hampton, who'd be one of the most prestigious choices for the job, and who can be cast, which is something that readers and authors often care about, who will be in the lead roles. And he also gets a cut of the film's box office usually in these. This is the typical thing for this sort of deal. But what probably matters more to an author with that amount of cultural power is that the book and the film are mutually complementary, that there's not a sense in which the book has been trashed by bad adaptation.
Simone, are there many genres that you think are particularly appealing to filmmakers?
The big growth area at Frankfurt at the moment is comics and graphic novels. There's huge interest in this. And we can see this just going to the cinemas, you know, Sin City or Persepolis or Ghost World or Watchmen. It's increasingly a genre that's being mined by film producers.
Why?
Partly because it's got a huge appeal in the 18 to 35-year-old demographic that goes to the cinema the most often. So that's a good start. But also, more creatively, it's because comics are an inherently visual medium. And when you look at a comic or a graphic novel, it's almost like a storyboard that a director does when mocking up what a film will look like. And directors of these films of much-loved graphic novels will try to emulate the visual and aesthetic style of the comic in the film version. That's quite important for fans. And I think the directors see it as a real challenge for them creatively.
Is it more expensive or less expensive to do an animated film? Because you don't have the actors, but you have the voice actors.
Very expensive.
Yeah,
it's funny. They say you have to spend less nursing the stars through their tantrums and their drug habits, but you have to spend more on the computer-generated effects. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
So do screenwriters dabble in books? I mean, what happens after? Is it two-way? I mean, you get a book spin-off from a film?
Yeah, it goes in all directions. And in fact, this is something that adaptation studies has woken up to, is that it never was book first, then film, because TV came along and complicated that process. And now with all the myriad of different media forms we've got, it can come from anywhere and go to anywhere. And
I think an interesting example of that is something like Sex and the City, which was a column, book, television program, film. You know, it sort of all feeds back on itself. And in the meantime, she, as a novelist, she's kept writing.
And then I just saw an ad for a film. Is it Julia and Julie, which is something that started as a blog about Julia Child's cooking, and it's turned into a film?
Yes.
With Meryl Streep.
Something the book show I remember covered on the idea of blogs that then become books. It's Julie and Julia, and a woman trying to cook Julia Child's recipes in a small New York apartment kitchen.
What happens? Does the oven blow up? Is that the big dramatic sequence?
I think she tries to cook cordon bleu recipes in a very cramped galley kitchen.
But this is a film? I mean, Ellie, does it sound like a film to you?
Well,
but it is a film.
It is a film. And it's interesting. I think that is a really interesting example, because I was also thinking about something like The Dangerous Book for Boys, which has been optioned for both.
That's Con Eagleton.
Yes, exactly. And you know, another that best-selling book, but has been adapted for as a television series and a film. And if you're familiar with the book, you know, it's very referencey, and you don't immediately think, oh, that's a natural drama, because it's not. So it really had to be completely reinvented.
So that was a book, if I can remember correctly, it was sort of based on one of those sort of activities for boys.
Exactly, old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned things that boys could do, like blow up things. And
yeah,
how to tie knots and Latin verbs.
And all of that. Yeah. And stuff that apparently was dangerous, but now they should be doing.
Because it's good for them.
Because it's good for them.
Because they're all too mollycoddled. So that's that was always the
So, yeah, I mean, that's when you think, well, where's the drama in that? I mean, there could be a few explosions.
They reinvented it. And in fact, you know, had kind of got a, well, I know that I think it's Disney who did the, who bought the film rights. And I, you know, I, someone else might know this because I'm just reaching deep into my memory, but I think they've restructured entirely and it's kind of a father-son story now. So which I think really shows that with something like nonfiction that it can be adapted and then reinvented entirely. So, and I think if you're the author, you do want to be involved in how all that happens.
Yeah, it's a case in which there, because there was no narrative and just a series of activities to do, what's really happened is that the brand of that book, which was subsequently spun off into girls' companion books as well, the brand has really transcended any of the original content. And I imagine they'll turn it into a Ripping Yarns style
I think that's
retro nostalgia fantasy.
And I think that's it's an interesting example as well in that it sold millions of copies worldwide, and so therefore to a television production company and a film company, that's enormously attractive because you've got a built-in audience. You've got people who you know will go and see those films.
Well, on the sale question, Simone, the adaptation process from books to film has to go through two steps, options and rights. How does that work?
Yeah, it is a two-step process. Options is the first step where basically you're selling a producer the right to, well, the agreement that you won't shop the book elsewhere for a certain specified period. So, you know, they've got first dibs for, say, a year or 18 months.
And how much is that worth to a writer?
Pretty small money, particularly if you're a mid-list or a beginning author. It can be for as little as, you know, $500. But the more important is the second step, which is the rights sale, which is when the producer's been able to raise production finance, when it helps to have a well-known book, and then they go through sale, and that's a final transfer of the film or TV rights. And after that, perhaps a powerful author like McEwan manages to negotiate an executive producer credit, or more commonly, the author's just patted on the head and said, you know, it's over to us now, and it's time for you to walk away.
So it depends on the author how much they sign away when they sell their rights to a film production. Company.
Very much. And it's all about bargaining position. I mean, celebrity authors have enormous power and sway, and they can get contractual terms that are much more favourable to them. Beginning authors maybe are lucky to get the deal and they just hope for the best.
Agents advise authors, I believe, not to transfer their film rights to a publisher. Why? Is that because they're really bad at making the next bit happen?
It's partly that. Agents think that's the case. Agents often think publishers don't know enough about the film industry to actively shop the rights. And agents, too, want to get a bigger cut for themselves and the author. They don't want to have to split the income 50-50 with the publisher.
Ellie, what do you reckon?
I think it's traditionally publishers publish books. You know, that's their area of expertise. And because agents have held back film rights, they haven't developed expertise in selling film. You know, it's been a sort of chicken and egg situation. And, you know, I would just say that whoever is in the best position to represent the rights should be representing them. If you're with a publishing company who has someone who's pitching film, then fantastic. If you don't, then better with the agent. It's really just making sure that whoever is doing it is out there and knows what they're doing.
So, Ellie, do you think, finally, should authors think about adapting their books to the screen before they even begin writing their books? You can read it. Sometimes you read a book and you say, look, this is so filmic. There's a scene, then there's a scene, there's a scene. You can see it's been written with a film in mind.
Well, yeah, I think you're quite right. You can. But I think it's also very important to acknowledge that it's a very, very different style of writing, screenwriting and writing a novel. And some people can do both, but most people are better at one or the other. So if you're a novelist, it may be that you're much better just going with the novel and then letting somebody else do the screenplay. To write what you're comfortable with. I don't think you should try and second guess what somebody else might want.
So just finally, Simone, do you agree with that? Do you think you're either one or the other?
Certainly, if you write a book that's badly written because it was so obviously trying to be a screenplay, it's not going to do you any favours at all. But the rare examples, Rex Pickett's Sideways is one, a book that gets written as a screenplay and a novel and then succeeds in both media. There are rare exceptions, but very rare exceptions.
And I think actually Julian Fellowes is a good example of that too, someone who's, you know, been an actor, director, screenwriter and novelist.
So he really knows, you know, the territory.
It is possible. I think authors often feel they can do it without really being aware of just what a different challenge a screenplay is. So maybe better to stick to the novel and let someone else polish this terrific screenplay from it.
Well, thank you both for your time this morning. Ailey Lawson, publicity consultant with Hachette Publishing.
Publishing consultant.
Sorry, missed typo.
That's right.
Now I can't speak.
Sorry.
Publishing consultant with Hachette Publishing and Simone Murray, senior lecturer in communications and media studies in the School of English, Communications and Performance Studies at Monash University. Thank you both.
Thank you for having me on.